11 o'clock hour, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. You can also watch us on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every day. Our video streaming is presented by the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. We say hello to our buddy Richard Deitch of The Athletic. Richard, how you doing?
You know, when I first started doing the show back in 1927 or whatever it was, there was no video streaming. There was no Twitch. There was no law office sponsoring all this. Look at you guys forged into the 21st century as a multimedia player. So congrats on all that.
Look, we're just trying to be like these, these Power Five conferences, get big TV deals and things like that. That's what we're working towards, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, this with no disrespect, but I'm thinking the law office still maybe a little less zeros than the Big Ten. But these are good dreams and goals to have, no doubt.
So the SEC signs their big deal with Disney and ESPN that's going to kick in, and then the Big Ten does this gigantic deal with Fox, NBC, and CBS that's going to kick in that kicks ESPN out of having – the Big Ten. What do you think the next shoe to drop is going to be when it comes to these college football television deals?
Well, I mean, the next deal either is the Big 12 or the Pac 12. Like, that, you know, I'm no genius to come up with that. Big 12 put out a statement that they were negotiating or they're open for business. ESPN quickly saying we're not negotiating. I'm sure the truth lies somewhere in the middle. But both those conferences will eventually get some kind of short to long term deal. The real question, of course, is like, what are those conferences? Like, will the Pac-12, like what we see as of today, as we're talking at this early September 2022, like, is that going to be the conference in the next year, the next two? It's the same thing with the Big 12. Will we see any more expansion? Now, the Big 10 says that it's not expanding. I don't know whether to believe that or not. You know, I, as a general rule, I don't believe college administrators. I feel like that's a very good guide just in life. And then if they surprise me by telling the truth, like it's a good day. So I'm not really sure where to go with that. But the next dominoes, quote unquote dominoes to fall will be Big 12 and Pac-12 will sign deals. I think because ESPN, depending on how you want to frame it, either opted not to deal with to do business with the Big Ten because they were not satisfied with the deal, or the Big Ten said ESPN opted, or the Big Ten saying that they didn't need ESPN to do their deal. I think it's very clear that ESPN absolutely needs more college football inventory. They want to maintain that monopoly. The West Coast is very important to them, I think, in terms of windows, particularly late night windows on the East Coast for them. So I think for sure ESPN gets in on one of those conferences in a massive way. My guess would be they'd get in on both. And I think Fox is probably a player in one of the in one of those two conferences as well. And then lastly, I would think the Pac-12, just because it's Silicon Valley, has a lot of people in the sort of the streaming world. I think they do some kind of deal with Apple or Amazon for part of their inventory as well. That would be, if I had to guess today, that's sort of my guess how it plays out.
Okay, that's the perfect segue into my next question, because Apple, Amazon, you have ESPN Plus, all the Peacock, Paramount Plus, all of these streaming entities that are connected to networks in some ways, some aren't, but they are taking over. And we've seen the Thursday night football package for the NFL. That has gone to streaming to Amazon. It looks like Apple is going to land NFL Sunday Ticket. And I bring all this up because we did a poll question last week asking how many Titans games are you going to attend this year? And the results didn't really surprise me, but it was an interesting, you know, discussion piece, because people basically said anywhere from 1 to 5, somewhere in that range, but that's about it. And a lot of people reference that they can sit on their couch and watch all the games and, you know, see it.
There's an option for 0, and a surprising number of people signed up for 0. Like, I don't know if it was 50%, but it was a sizable number, just said, I'm not going to any games.
Right. So how much are these deals and these streaming packages hurting attendance, because it's just so much easier to be able to watch whatever you want to watch from your couch?
All right, so there's, you know, that's, you know, there are college courses that could do a whole semester on all your questions there. So, but let's take, just because it's like, you know, the landscape is changing. But here's what I would say, because let's use the Titans, because you guys brought that up. That's actually an interesting result for the survey. The NFL has one made a decision that while they're in the streaming business now with Amazon, their primary business is still linear television, right? Like, look who they signed their deals with. They signed it with Fox, that's over the air. They signed it with CBS, that's over the air. They signed it with NBC, that's over the air. They have ESPN, ABC. I guess, ESPN is not over the air, but it's traditional cable. They do have that Thursday night package now that went to Amazon. But, the reality is, and I can tell you this because I obviously talked to all these executives, it's not like there was a big, heavy bidding for Thursday Night Football. I mean, Fox, CBS, they've all had it at this point. NFL Network has had it. So the NFL, at least, is still sort of very much how we watch traditional television. And then to get to your point, why would, Titans fans not want to go to 8 games versus, zero games? Well, price is not cheap anymore. You guys are in Nashville's a big, big city with big city prices, so it's not necessarily the easiest thing for, a family of three or, five buddies to go to. I think the NFL is sort of, I want to say they're not family friendly, but let's face it, NFL games, particularly tailgate situations, it's kind of a very different feel than taking some little kids to baseball games. It's just they're sort of in attendance audience is a little bit different than some other sports, and they're cool with that. And then lastly, and this is a big one, the ability to sort of get the games at the highest level of viewability. So you're talking about if you have a great smart TV in 4K, you have all the luxury of just sort of sitting in your, favorite room with food coming to you, with the ability to watch Red Zone so you can see, 7 different games at once. The NFL and its business partners have really made the television experience so great that you can make an argument, unless you really love to be out there and watching it live, and unless you really want to hang out with your buddies, if you want to literally watch the game itself, it's actually not close. Watching the game on television is a 20 times better experience than watching it at a stadium, just because even if you have the best seats in the house, 50-yard line or whatever, you're not seeing everything. Hard to get, you're not getting replays, generally speaking, right away, unless you're, in a suite that has a television or something like that. So I think, the NFL made a calculation in many ways, and probably a smart one, was that we're going to make the television experience as best as possible. Thus, we're going to get the billions of dollars from these media companies. And if we end up losing a little bit of attendance, the loss of that isn't going to be close to what we just made in viewership. And then lastly, I know I'm sort of rambling here, what the NFL will do for sure, and all these places are already doing it, they will try to make the stadium experience best in class, which means the best kind of Wi-Fi. You'll, at a certain point, 10, 15, 20 years from now, you'll probably be able to bet from your seat, which has some kind of electronic device. So all that stuff's going to come. But at the moment, I don't blame fans for watching at home. It's just a more relaxing, better experience.
Yeah, you're right about that, Richard. We're talking with Richard Deitch of The Athletic, and you can catch his podcast out on Apple, the sports media podcast. Now, Richard, the U.S. Open is going on, and obviously this is Serena's last go. She beat the number 2 player in the world last week, and now she plays, I believe, Tomjanovic today.
I don't even know how to say it.
Right. Yeah.
It looks like Tomjanovic. It sounds easier to say Tomjanovic. I don't even know how to say it.
But the ratings on this, do you expect this to be the highest ratings U.S. Open has gotten in some years? And do you think it will trickle down into the men's as well?
First of all, D-Mace, I have to get up from the heart attack I just had. A national station talking U.S. Open tennis. I'm proud of you guys. Huge moment for me. It's not college football or the NFL. Finally, my dream. It's taken 30 years, but the South finally will embrace the U.S. Open tennis.
Hey, listen, we can talk about all sports because you are, it all.
I'm busting on you. So the viewership for the first two nights that Serena's played has been off the charts. Night one, where I think a lot of people thought, she may lose, and obviously they were going to do a ceremony. Second most watched first night in ESPN's history of doing the U.S. Open. And the first night is a relatively new phenomenon because back in the day, CBS didn't do the first night of the tournament. They did weekend. So essentially, the second most watched first night of the U.S. Open in history, that's a big, big number. The the match that you just had to advance past the second round, again, did major, major business. Multiple millions of people watching. I don't think it set a record, but, again, I think it was over 2.5 million or around there. Again, I can tell you, someone who covered tennis for a long time at SI and obviously covers media, these are insane numbers for early in the U.S. Open. It doesn't exist. So as long as Serena's playing, and again, she plays tonight, the numbers will be off the charts. I don't think they would pass, let's say, a final, like between Serena and Venus, or a final between Serena and someone, or Federer and Nadal. But you're basically going to get finals like numbers every time Serena plays, which again is, I could tell you, someone who's covered tennis a long time, that's unheard of. I don't think it will filter to the men, to be honest. The reality is the two of the best draws for the U.S. Open for men are not playing, and that's Novak Djokovic, obviously, for vaccination reasons, and Roger Federer for injury reasons. Nadal's playing, and he's a draw, but Rafa Nadal versus, you know, some European that the general U.S. audience doesn't know about isn't going to do it. Where tennis is hurt on the men's side at the moment is that there's not a big U.S. men's star. Like, that person doesn't exist. And, you know, as good as, like, John Isner is against, like, the rest of the world, or as good as, like, someone like Taylor Fritz is, you know, these are top 20 players, obviously incredibly accomplished. They don't move the needle viewership-wise at all. No one's tuning in to see them yet. So if you had Federer and Nadal and Djokovic and Serena, you'd probably be looking at maybe the greatest first week ever viewership-wise of any major, because you just have the three biggest stars in the men's game in the last 15, 20 years, and obviously you have Serena, who's incredible. So to answer your question, D-Mace, no, it's not. The viewership number is like the whole night, so they get the benefit of like Serena's gigantic number when people are watching her. But like, if I could, I don't have it in front of me, but I can guarantee, like, if I broke it down, like, from Serena playing and then the match after Serena, which, you know, I think night one was Kyrgios, I bet you they lost 1.5 million viewers the second she was done. So it's not carrying over. But regardless, Serena's story, it doesn't often happen in tennis, but this is a story that transcends the sport. So you have casual fans, people who generally never watch tennis ever, they're probably sort of checking it out and following. And if she could somehow get to the second week, that's when they might be looking at 4 or 5 million people for second week matches, which, again, that's incredible. I mean, that's like a low-level Stanley Cup Finals game. I mean, this just doesn't happen in tennis. So it's a big story developing, and we'll see how she does tonight.
Yeah, and I would tell people, just flip over there. Even if you're not a tennis watcher, just watch the crowd. The crowd is amazing.
Yeah,
you'll see who's
amazing.
Who in the crowd, and they react to every point. Richard,
can I just tell you guys real quick? Let me just tell you real quick. I know we're short on time, but you'll appreciate this. So I covered tennis for Sports Illustrated when I was there for, I think it was 14 or 15 years of my tenure there. And a couple times, because it was a very big publication, we'd get seats in the first row. There's like 5 media seats in the first row, and they'd usually lottery it up. But SI sometimes got, let's face it, favored nation status. To see these players that close, people have no idea like how good the 300th best player is, let alone Serena. So if you have any dudes who like ever come up to you and be like, oh, I watched Serena the other day, I could take a point off her. You have no idea what you're talking about. You're insane. Not only could you not take a point off her, the likelihood is you can sell her an ice cream. So relax and enjoy the
tennis. Yeah.
Sorry for the film.
No, you're right. My grandfather used to take me to the matches when I was a kid, too. That's the first thing you notice is how much harder they hit the ball than it looks on TV.
Yeah.
But, Richard, exactly. Real quick, I want you to hit on your podcast. I have maybe more of an interest than many on, you know, the workings of a play-by-play announcer, but your interview with Leah Hextall was really compelling. You know, I was aware of some of the stuff that was going on with her, the challenges that, you know, any female play-by-play announcer in their first year would logically get, but wow, to hear her talk about her firsthand experience, that was really good stuff. And you know, tough when you try to put yourself in her shoes.
Yeah, no, first of all, I appreciate you listening, so thank you, and I appreciate Leah Hextall giving me, just trusting me to let her tell her story. So, again, it is more than okay to criticize a female broadcaster or a male broadcaster. But a female broadcaster, if you don't like their play-by-play, their style, whatever, I would argue that someone like Leah Hextall has so much institutional things against her because there's no minor leagues for her. Most, as you know this, Willie, so many of the jobs, like in minor league baseball, minor league hockey, minor league basketball, they're male announcers. They're not women. So there's not a pipeline. So if you're Leah Hextall, you know, you got hired by ESPN, you got sort of put on the big time right away. And in many ways, you got to learn on the job, which the reality is men don't always have to do. But the real thing with this, and this is where it gets pretty gross, is she not only got social media vitriol pretty much every time she was on the air, and maybe I guess the reality of Twitter is, you know, you're on it, everybody gets it. But that included death threats, eventually, where people would track down her website and send that to her directly, including one guy who basically said that, like, I'm going to blow your brains out so I don't have to hear you call a hockey game again. Now, like, the reality is, like, you know, I'm sure law enforcement can tell you that you take all these threats seriously, and you do, and thankfully, I would imagine most of them are just anonymous jerks who are never going to follow up on it. But, like, you know, like, what if the 1 in 10 million person is the crazy person who does? And how do you just deal with that as a broadcaster when you're just trying to prepare to call a regular hockey game, as you know about, and you got to think about somebody who just declared that they want to kill you because they don't like your commentary. So I don't know how someone sort of, I shouldn't say like that, to be able to sort of go through that and then to still do the job and to still sort of like shake that off and just sort of continue on your journey, that's really impressive to me, because I think that would spook so many people. And that's what Leah Hextall talked about. It, like, again, the sexualized comments and all that stuff, it happens every day, which in itself must be just mentally exhausting. But then a couple of times it just went to a, like, literal place where people were threatening to kill her. And again, we're talking about a hockey broadcaster. But, you know, I wish I had the solution to this between anonymity and social media and misogyny and all that. But I appreciated her telling her story. And it was pretty eye-opening, man. It's, you know, as you know, play-by-play is a hard job without anything else going on. And then if that stuff's floating in your brain, that's a mess.
Well, Richard, great stuff as always. It's good to catch up with you again. We'll do it again soon, and I hope you have a good weekend.
All right. Work on that law office, man. I see a big thing.
I will, hopefully,
help them to expand.
Yes, exactly. Richard Deitch from The Athletic joining us. A lot of great stuff there. But coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans and Harold Landry. What's next for them after the ACL injury to Landry? That's all next. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 7:05 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds are at home at First Horizon Park, taking on the Memphis Redbirds, AAA affiliate of the St. Louis Cardinals. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you as we discuss the Titans. We'll do more of a what's next with Harold Landry and Rashard Weaver. We'll do that here in just a second. But I want to ask you guys this question, because last year Mike Vrabel won Coach of the Year. It's well documented, using 91 players to win the AFC, that they were the number one seed in the AFC. Obviously, Mike Vrabel is not sitting there going, man, I really wish one of my star players would get hurt so I can, you know, show that I'm such a great coach. But I do feel like this is a strength of his, that whenever there's adversity, whether it's Derrick Henry missing half the season last year, now losing his top pass rusher and Harold Landry for the entire season with a torn ACL, I'm reminded time and time again of why he is the Coach of the Year, because I feel like that he thrives in these situations.
Well, you got to understand where he comes from in that regard, you know, whether it be Ohio State, you know, Pittsburgh. And I'm talking, you know, teams that had traditions of winning, Ohio State, Pittsburgh, or New England. There was always constant change, and it was next man up. So that's what he's used to. He's not used to, okay, a key guy going down and nobody stepping up. You know, when you're used to and you see how coaches sort of, you know, if a guy goes down or if a guy gets traded, guy retires, they just plug in the next guy. They all, and I think that's why he loves the aspect of just coaching an individual, because he coaches that individual up. And then if that frontline guy goes down, he knows that he's already implemented enough in that backup guy that he should come in and there shouldn't be a drop off. There shouldn't be this major drop off. So I'm not surprised that Vrabel, you know, the team went through all this adversity last year with guys missing games and getting injured, and he was able to just, you know what, hey, next guy up. Mm-hmm. That's his motto. Listen, next guy up. I don't care. Things happen on a football field. People get traded. People get hurt. The guy behind him needs to be ready, and I'm going to do my job as a head coach and make sure my coaching staff get those guys prepared, ready to go. That's why I'm not worried about Malik Willis if he has to come in a game, because I believe in what Vrabel is doing coaching-wise.
Hmm. You know, one thing jumps out at me. Our theme today, your statement you made in the first hour, you don't get ready, you have to be ready.
Yep.
When they had the COVID controversy, when they were the first team that was getting hammered for, you know, the workouts and all that stuff, and they went through however many days when they had the outbreak where they couldn't practice, and then they had to play the Bills. And remember how sharp they were? And we were thinking, how in the world are they going to prepare for this game? They haven't practiced. They haven't done anything. They're just going to have to show up and try to beat a really good Bills team. And they throttled them. And Mike Vrabel, I'll always remember this. He said, when the bleep hits the fan, you have to already be ready. He said, you don't say, hey, the storm's coming, we got to get ready. You have to already be ready. So I do think he thrives in that. He's good at rallying, and they do, I think, a much better job than many teams of dealing with things that are probably inevitable over the course of the season. You hope that you don't get hit that hard. I still think the Landry injury, if you look through the entire preseason, that's the one really bad one. Yep. That is hit. But when you compare it to the last couple of preseasons since Rabel's, I think there's been some seasons where they've had a lot more to deal with than something like that. I still think overall, roster-wise, it's not a crisis.
No, not yet. Not yet.
Right, and it can change.
Joe on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, Chase totally jinxed us yesterday when he said Titans news comes in threes. I will take responsibility for that. That is true.
You did say that.
I did say that.
We could roll the tape back. That was the last thing you said.
I'm admitting it. We don't need to.
Guilty.
Coming up next, how do the Titans replace Harold Landry? And I believe there's more pressure on somebody not named Rashad Weaver. We'll do that next. Chase Woolley and D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game.
It's terrible, terrible news for the Titans, and it means that they're going to have to rely on an assortment of players to step up. Right away, Rashad Weaver comes to mind, and he's someone that has done really well in the postseason, or the preseason, the past couple of years. You look at the way he was able to get to the quarterback and, you know, get sacks and disrupt the quarterback, leading to an interception for Joe Jones. You know, those are things that you got to bring to the table. But then there's two other names. You know, obviously Ola Adeniyi is someone that you look at, and he is an ideal situational pass rusher. He's one of those squatty, really strong type of guys that could come off the edge and give some of the taller tackles some issues. So that's an option. You have David Anenye, who was around the quarterback all the time. It was a surprise that he didn't make the roster. A lot of us had him making that roster. So that's an option. But one thing that I think we really need to look at is Bud Dupree. Now, this is an opportunity because Harold Landry isn't the only very well-compensated outside linebacker on the team. Bud Dupree is as well. And you're seeing him a year removed from the injury, right? He got to go through a full season, you know, after recovering from that torn ACL.
Teron Davenport yesterday, part of the TD Power Hour on Stillman & Company. Welcome back in. Chase Woolley and D-Mace here on 1025-1063 The Game, discussing Harold Landry out for the season with a torn ACL, and TD just hit the nail on the head. I think Bud Dupree is the one that now has to assume all of the pressure that is left because of the absence of Harold Landry. He names some other guys, too. I mean, David Anenye is somebody that I had on my 53-man roster. I was surprised he didn't make it. I do believe he's going to
make it now.
I think he's going to make it now. But, you know, he's somebody that you can look for as a depth piece. Ola Adeniyi is another good one. He had 2.5 sacks last year, the first 2.5 in his entire career. But to me, and Rashard Weaver goes without saying, to me it's Bud Dupree. It's going to fall on Bud Dupree, Derek.
Well, he's going to have to. This is a guy that they brought in from the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they gave him a massive contract. Now, he was coming off an ACL. And, you know, he came back prematurely, and it was noticeable. But toward the end of the season, he started to pick it up. So they need Bud Dupree to start where he finished last year. And if they can get that production that, you know, that they saw in Pittsburgh, if they could get that production this year without Harold Landry, it is a big plus. Now, if he continues to struggle, this defense will struggle. If Dupree cannot get back to form, this defense will struggle, because now you don't have a Harold Landry. The guy you paid all this money to, that you thought was going to be a double-digit sack guy, he hasn't gotten back into form. So now you're basically down two outside linebackers. And now that puts pressure on the interior guys, Denico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons and the guys that rotate. It puts a lot of pressure on those guys to stop the run or get pressure on a quarterback. Somebody has to step up. And I do believe that Rashard Weaver will, you know, again, because I believe in what coach – I believe in Vrabel's coaching. So I believe that Rashard Weaver will come in and get the job done. Again, will he be Harold Landry? I don't know. But if he's close to or equal or even better, that's great. They won't miss a beat. But like you said, Chase, it depends on Dupree. If Dupree can get back to form, then this defense will be okay. If he doesn't without Landry, now you're putting the pressure on the interior guys.
I remember last year how much discussion we had about trying to manage what was going on with Dupree and how well they ended up doing that. That ended up being a big strength of the defense, despite the fact that they didn't get much from Bud Dupree. I think that's a big thing that they can fall back on. Because, as we said, they're in general pretty good with dealing with adversity, but they've dealt with this particular thing. Now it's on Dupree to carry the load. Hopefully he's healthy, he's ready. He makes 19.2 against the cap, by the way. He is, as far as percentage of the cap, second only to Ryan Tannehill on percentage of the cap taken up, 9.1%. So there's already a lot of, responsibility that a guy like that has. You need production out of the guys you're investing in like that. Here's his chance. The other thing that we haven't mentioned yet, and Derek touched on it, and in the first hour we mentioned this too, but Denico Autry's versatility that we saw last year, he was a guy that was picking up the slack some for Bud Dupree because he can play inside and outside. Now, ideally, his spot is right next to the nose guard, right? That's maybe where you have the best versatility, but you can move him out there. So I think that's something to look for. Rashard Weaver, let's see what he's got. But you've got Autry, and then you've got some guys like Tierre Tart, Naquan Jones, some good finds that yep. they've had that can play alongside of Jeffrey Simmons and, you know, be in that rotation. And hopefully you can have that same level of success.
So when an injury like this happens, I think the initial reaction for everybody is, okay, they got to go out. They got to go make a move. They got to go sign somebody. They got to go make a trade, like go get a name, you know, all that. JPP's out there, Jason Pierre-Paul, D. Ford. We kind of went through some that
yeah, if you look at the various
right
sites,
now.
People are throwing a bunch of names
sure,
out there.
Sure, sure. But that's what happens every time, like with the receivers. Like, okay, who's available? Who can you go get? You know, and they end up signing a name and Josh Gordon.
The Will Fullers of defensive ends.
Look, the Titans all-name team has added another member with Josh Gordon, and they could with JPP or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I look at the depth that they have, and you just named some of them at that position, and I sit here and I go, well, why wouldn't you just try what you have? You're not replacing Harold Landry. Like, you're not going to just snap your fingers and all of a sudden you have another guy that's going to get, you know, 12, 13 sacks for you like Harold Landry. But, you know, why couldn't it be Rashard Weaver really stepping up. I mean, he's going to be the starter. It's going to be Bud Dupree and Rashad Weaver. I mean, I think those are going to be the two starters at your outside backer. But why couldn't it be a David Anini? Why couldn't it be a Ola Adeniyi? You know, guys like that. And see what you have with the guys that have been with you. If you want to bring in a depth piece, you have the practice squad that you can play with by adding a veteran. You could put JPP or D Ford or somebody like that, like you're doing with Josh Gordon. Low risk, high reward. But I don't think that's the worst case scenario for them.
No.
They to don't. Be able to ride with what they got and see how it works.
Yeah, and they, as we mentioned, they created a little bit of flexibility in their cap space by reworking Derrick Henry's contract. So you have the opportunity to wait and see. See how it unfolds week to week. If something presents itself, if you feel the need, you can pounce if you want to. But, Derek, this team, they replaced Derrick Henry for half a season and got the job done and were the number one seed. They've dealt with this kind of thing before.
Yeah, they have. You know, Derrick goes down, Dante Foreman comes in, and, you know, he's not Derrick Henry, but the run game did not take three or four steps back. Yes, it did take a step. Maybe a step and a half back.
But we were stunned how much they produced.
Absolutely. They still were able to stick to who they were as a football team, meaning run the football first, play action, and do some of those things. So, again, that's why I am not too concerned. Yes, it's a blow. But if something like this is going to happen, you'd rather it happen at the beginning. First, you rather it not happen at all. But if it does happen, you rather it happen at the beginning of the year than sort of in the middle of the season or later in the year when you're on this playoff push and all of a sudden one of your key guys go down and you look at the waiver wire, there's nobody out there and, you know, you don't have enough snaps with the guys behind them. And then as the season goes, more guys get injured too. So, you know, again, I believe that, you know, Vrabel was going to allow, you know, Rashad Weaver to take his shot at being that weak side linebacker or anybody else on the roster right now. And if they show that this is a little bit too much for them, then I'm sure he and John Robinson will get together and make some moves to try to bring someone in. I'm sure they're thinking that right now, whether it's for, you know, depth or to be a starter. They're thinking about bringing another linebacker in just in case it doesn't work out with Weaver or anybody else on that roster at that particular position.
Joe on our text line, driven by WilsonKennyHoney.com, says, I think the Titans should try and get Robert Quinn. Quinn with the Bears. Man, I don't know how much that would cost you because he had 18.5 sacks last year as a pro bowler.
Yeah, I don't do that. Like, yeah. He's expensive, too. He's still got, I think, 2 or 3 years left.
But people are rushing. It's like, listen, the boat is not sinking, okay? The ship is not sinking, people, you know? Where you got all of a sudden, like, let's try to do anything to get the boat to stay afloat. The ship is not sinking. There's a piece broke. We can fix it and move on. They don't need to try to go trade picks and players to get this guy and then absorb his contract. No, the quarterback didn't get hurt. You know, they don't have Derrick Henry, the quarterback, and somebody else getting hurt. They got one guy that got hurt, an important guy, but it's one guy. The ship is not sinking. It's a little bit broke right now. Hopefully Rashad Weaver can be the guy that can help fix it and they can move on.
And look, I mean, everything I've seen out of him, granted it's a small sample size, whether it's in practice or in the preseason, I've liked. Uh-huh. I mean, I feel like that, okay, there's something there. He's a fifth-round pick, fourth, mm-hmm. fifth-round pick. Hungry guy, good player out of Pitt. I think they could have something. So, look, it could be everybody's freaking out right now.
Fourth round
rightfully pick. So. Thank you. Rightfully so. But then Weaver comes in and, you know, puts 6-7 sacks there. Dupree gets the rest. It's by committee. It may not be one guy. I mean, I also don't get lost in the whole like, well, you got to have one guy that has double digit sacks. Well, if your defense is getting to the quarterback, then isn't that accomplishing the job, even if it's with two, three, four guys?
Yeah, there's a lot better ways to measure the sacks or the pressure on the quarterback. You know, tip balls and quarterback pressures and hurries, things that lead to good things for the defense. I think that has always been something that has been oversold. Do you have the one guy that gets all the sacks? But I think that's a real good point by all of you guys. If you're just a casual football fan and you're watching the preseason games, you can't help but have noticed Rashad Weaver. They played the heck out of him in all of the games, and he was consistently beating his man. Now, for whatever that's worth, he's going to face better guys and all that stuff. But I think that's an important thing to note. I think they may have something there.
I mean, you know, you want your – if you're paying guys big money like that, you would hope, especially on – not necessarily on the interior because it's harder for those guys to get sacks, but they'll go out, those guys on the outside, you want those guys to get sacked. But like you said, Willie, you know, sacks is not necessarily the end-all, be-all. It's pressures, it's tackles for loss, it's how you set the edge to kind of get everything to go back inside of you to set it up for somebody else. Listen, prime example is, you know, if you look at some of the top defenses in the National Football League over the course of 25, 30 years, you know, you can see where those guys up front take on the bulk of those blocks. And you know, the guys behind them are the guys that are getting all the tackles or the sacks. But we say the guys in the interior, well, they're not that good because they don't get sacks. Well, no, they're doing their job. They right. hella good because they're doing their job to
they're
allow the guys
it up.
Exactly, allow guys behind them to get the glory. Just because you don't get the sack doesn't mean necessarily the glory's not there. We see it. You as a casual fan may not see it, but when they turn on that film room, and they start looking at those big guys in the middle and the job they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do.
What does the loss of Landry mean for a position group that Derek has been concerned about since the start of training camp? We'll discuss that coming up next. But first, Willie, tell us about Lone Pronto.
All right, let's talk Lone Pronto. These guys are doing excellent work for a lot of people, including the Donick family. We're working with them right now as we speak. And we're carrying through the message that I've been saying to all of you now for a good while. Lone Pronto knows that right now in our listening area, because of the way Nashville is booming, if you're a homeowner, your home's value is way up there. And you can use that to your advantage if you're looking for ways to pay off bills. Maybe it's credit cards or other high-interest loans, a car loan, for example, a tuition payment, things that require some cash. You've got that in your home, and Lone Pronto can access that for you with excellent mortgage rates. They're helping a lot of people. 30-year fixed rates, 15-year APRs, HELOCs, all of these things that they will get you the best, lowest rate possible, no matter what your goal is to do with the money. Not all lender mortgages are created equal. So let Loan Pronto go to work for you being the low-rate leader that they are. It's an all-digital, super-fast process now. I'm telling you firsthand, with virtually zero paperwork. And no hassle. I can tell you, I didn't have any paperwork. It was all digital for me. And it's outstanding to think about that now because it really streamlines the process. Call Loan Pronto and see if they can help you. You could even skip the next couple of house payments. Loan Pronto at 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780. Or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. Silly Underdog Picks is back. You can play right now. Pick three football underdog teams you think will win this week outright for a chance to win. Just go to thegamenashville.com or download the 102.5 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and mine did not come through last night, but that's okay.
Another pick was Purdue, and they went down. Last night. They were right
there. Both teams
had the game in the palm of their hand. Couldn't pull it out. No points for a cover.
No points for a cover at all. All right, D-Mace, you've been concerned about the secondary for the Tennessee Titans since the beginning of training camp. And I can remember a few years ago when we would sit here and bang the table and say, the Titans got to find a pass rush. They got to find a pass rush. You work from the inside out. Well, how is the loss of Landry going to affect this young secondary of maybe at least at the beginning of the season not getting as effective of a pass rush as they would if Landry was in the lineup?
Well, again, it all depends on, you know, Rashad Weaver and company. The production you get out of them will depend on how the secondary, you know, reacts to this situation. Listen, if you have a sometimes, you know, okay secondaries can be masked by a really good front. I've seen it plenty of times. A lot of times it happened because of injury, where, you know, your starters, one or two of your starters go down in the secondary. But because your defensive line, your linebackers are so good at rushing the passer, that they don't have to cover as long. Listen, Deion Sanders, I've said this before, Deion Sanders, Rod Woodson, Jam Bailey, you know, whoever, name all these great corners. If they have guys on a defensive line that can't get to the passer ever, they're not as good as they can be. Not to say that those guys aren't great, but they can't cover for 5 seconds, you know. But if they only have to cover for 2 seconds, 3 seconds, they become who they are. Like, the greatness comes out of them. And with this secondary, I was always a little concerned and still am concerned, not necessarily of, you know, what they can be. It's the inexperience in this secondary. Beside Kevin Byard and Hooker, I think those two guys are probably the best 1-2 combination as far as safeties. I don't even know if they say free safety, strong safety. I just call them both safeties now. They're probably the best combination safeties in the National Football League. But those guys outside of them, the corners, the nickel guy, they don't have as much experience. And they're going to play against a lot of really good receivers in passing games. So if that defensive front can't get to the passer, it's going to expose their youth. And then it's going to be really important how Kevin Byard communicates with those guys. Because now we all got to be on the same page. Because if we break down on any level, it can be a touchdown in a pivotal game. So not having Harold Landry, and if no one can step up and fill that void, then it does put pressure on those guys on the back end.
I still think the defense, for them to have the season they want to have, has got to be relied upon to hold in check some elite offenses, elite quarterbacks. That's going to be the theme of the year. Unless some of these quarterbacks get hurt, they're going to face a high level of quarterback play, and as we've pointed out, maybe the highest of any team. It's right up there in the top two or three, regardless of how you rate them, right? You just go down the list. Who's the quarterback of the team they're playing? So you've got to have a good pass rush. I do think, based on what we've been saying, they still can have the level of pass rush that they had last year because of the offset, Dupree at full strength, and now you try to manage the other side without Landry. It had a chance to really, in a perfect world. But you know what? Every team is going to have some level of this happen. Guys are going to get hurt. You hope to have a little bit of luck that it doesn't hit you. This is what Floyd Reese used to say all the time. He goes, if I get hit with some injuries at one position, I can handle that. He said, what really hurts you is if you get two or three of those areas.
Right.
And now I can't plug all of those holes. You know, there's only so many holes you can plug with the salary cap funds that you have. But if it's one area, you can find different things. As we said, there's options. You start one way. Hey, it's not working. Let's see what's out there on the waiver wire. Let's see what kind of trades we might have. You don't have to all figure it out today. But I still think there's plenty there to have an excellent defense. But this, let's make no mistake about it. This defense needs to be a really good defense for them to have the success that they're looking for. D-Mace, one of the big things we've had all week long as a theme while you've been gone is how few people outside of this area believe the Titans are going to be any good. For a team that's won the last two divisions and had six straight winning seasons, their over-under is about 8.5 wins, and almost everybody is picking the Colts. And that was before Landry got hurt.
Well, that's because the Titans aren't the flashy team. Nashville, as big as we think we're getting as a city, we're still not a big sport market, considering what everyone else outside of Nashville thinks of us. But if this is, looking over the past couple of seasons, if this is New England or Pittsburgh or, you know, Dallas or name another team that, you know, people just love, they would say, oh, I'm picking this team to go to the Super Bowl. This is the team that everyone needs to beat right here, the Tennessee Titans. But because they're not, then people are always skeptical about, well, maybe, you know, last year a lot of those wins weren't supposed to be wins. They sort of lucked and won them. Well, like I said last week, you win those games at the beginning, you know, with young players. So when you do get a position as these players get experience, they know what to do. Sure. So to me, that's great that Vrabel was winning those games with inexperienced young players, because now they have some experience, and now I expect him to win these games, close games anyway.
Yeah, and I'll say this, and this was already going to be the case, but I think it's even more so. Now we're going to see the progression of Shane Bowen as a defensive play caller and how he wants to scheme things, because he's lost a major weapon. You know, Dean Pease was known for using the secondary and blitzing the secondary. He's going to have to get creative at times to make that defense be as dynamic as it's been in years past. So something to definitely continue to discuss. Coming up next, we'll get back into college football. Brett McMurphy of the Action Network, of course, has been a college football insider for a long time. He is going to join us. We'll do that next. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.